We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Well, it is Monday, September 16th, a little over a few months, 2 months since the first assassination attempt of former President Donald Trump. And we are now here with facing a potential second assassination attempt. The news has been very minimal in terms of what actually happened. And so what we do know is that Secret Service agents opened fire on a suspect carrying a firearm near Trump while golfing. So this coming from the New York Post. It comes almost exactly 2 months after the alleged shooter with Trump at, because I don't want to say his name, at the rally in Butler, Pennsylvania on July 13th, wounding him in the ear. The man's motives yesterday are not yet known. He was arrested by Palm Beach County Sheriff deputies. The White House issued a statement soon after the incident. And I'm just wondering, is this really from Biden? We don't really know, because he's not willing to take the podium, address America in a major national incident like this. It's just probably some of his staffers putting out a statement for him. But the White House said this: the president have been briefed about the security incident at the Trump International Golf Course where former President Trump was golfing. They are relieved to know that he is safe. They are, and they will be, kept regularly updated by their team. So former DNI under the Trump administration, John Radcliffe, joined Trey Gowdy on Fox News last night and said this in response to Trey Gowdy, I think asking the question that all of us are asking, which was, you know, were you really surprised that there was a second attempt on his life? What was your response? This is what John Radcliffe had to say.
Well, my reaction, I think, is unfortunately what most American, what the reaction of most Americans would be, which is, I'm not shocked. Why would anyone be shocked at this point in time if they heard that there were shots fired in the vicinity of President Trump, given what's happened? You know, given unprecedented legal cases, indictments against him, legal theories that have never been pursued. And when there was an actual assassination attempt against him, it was minimized by his political opponents. And when, you know, Kamala Harris on the stage last week at a debate demonized him and labeled him a threat to democracy, you know, why would any of us be surprised that there continue to be potential threats on his safety and on his life like there have been in the past?
So let's bring in Eric Prince. He is the founder of Blackwater and a former U.S. Navy SEAL officer. And good morning, Eric. And what do we know so far about this? I mean, a lot of the leftist media are saying this really wasn't a second assassination attempt, but I think it's pretty clear from the context that it does appear to be.
Of course it was. When you have a shooter get to a pre-planned location, getting direct line of sight to where Trump is golfing with a rifle. I've heard it either described as an AK-47 or an SKS, both of which fires a intermediate rifle cartridge. Absolutely, he was there to shoot the president. And fortunately, Secret Service Advance was doing one hole ahead of time, which is still not anywhere near what it should be. They at least, in reports indicate, they engaged him because they saw him lying in the tree line. He managed to run away, get to a vehicle, drive away, but a witness saw and got a picture of a license plate. And then he gets into traffic, but the Sheriff's Department did an excellent job of uploading that image into their license plate readers, pushed it to a helicopter, and they stopped him on I-95. Look, he's a crazed leftist that was obsessed with fighting and with the fighting in Ukraine, had countless anti-Trump screeds in his social media history, and you're right, the left has intellectually opened the door that it's okay to kill Donald Trump because he is the next Hitler, or he is this this terrible threat to democracy. And for all their talk of harsh language, they're the ones that are absolutely stoking those fires, and it's absolutely unacceptable.
Well, I always say if Democrats didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. So, of course, it's just, you know, President Trump that can't use rhetoric that is clearly taken out of context by them. And they say that, you know, he's the one who's always making all of these incendiary remarks. But then they're going out and actually calling for this type of political violence in their rhetoric. But somehow that's OK to them because Trump is the true threat to democracy. And it would be intellectually consistent for them for someone to follow up on that. And so now with this, and I think you're absolutely right that this was a second attempt on his life, given what we know about the situation now. My question, Eric Prince, is how did a shooter even get that close? Because, you know, some people are commenting, well, because he's not the current sitting president, then he doesn't get as much security. They were only one hole ahead. But he already had a first attempt on his life at Butler, Pennsylvania. So this seems like there's just not enough security around Donald Trump.
No, there is not. Apparently, Trump was approaching the green of hole five, which on the map is kind of the northeast corner of that golf course. And the shooter was somewhere just off the edge of the golf course in the tree line. The idea of a security perimeter much farther than one hole ahead is a given. And yes, Secret Service is under-resourced or intentionally incompetent, just like there's additional bad news stories coming out on the Secret Service on Butler, Pennsylvania, on people that were unqualified, that failed tests, that were pencil whipped, basically approved anyway by the former director, the female, that was then forced to resign. So yeah, there's just such a litany of incompetence. And that's why I called for yesterday Governor DeSantis in Florida to take primary control of the investigation, because it was an attempted murder in his state. And because I don't think I have no confidence in the federal government being able to investigate itself any further. The FBI field office, if we think that they're going to do an honest job of investigating this, the special agent in charge of that was a militant anti-Trumper who was, when they were appointed to that position, had to scrub their entire social media history of all the anti-Trump statements they'd made as an FBI agent. And these are the same guys that raided Trump on a completely nonsense documents case on behalf of Smith, the prosecutor. So the organs of federal law enforcement are at times either clearly incompetent or clearly hyper-compromised by politics. And that is a really, really bad combination. So I was glad to see that DeSantis last night said that the state of Florida would be doing a parallel investigation. If I were the governor, I would not have turned over that suspect to the feds until state law enforcement had thoroughly interrogated him and especially done a very detailed proctological analysis of all electronics and all his messaging, all his whereabouts for the last years, to figure out, was there any other outside stimulus causing this shooter to go try to commit murder yesterday?
And I'm speaking with Eric Prince, who is the founder of Blackwater. And I'm very grateful to see my own governor. I live in the state of Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis, saying that last night. This was posted at about 8:30 a local time, and he said this, that Eric Prince was referring to, the state of Florida will be conducting its own investigation regarding the attempted assassination at Trump International Golf Club. The people deserve the truth about the would-be assassin and how he was able to get within 500 yards of the former president and current GOP nominee. And I think you're right, Eric, that we've already seen the lack of candor, the lack of accountability, and the lack of information even being provided to Congress that's conducting its own oversight on the first assassination attempt. So why should this be any different in terms of any thorough type of investigation from the feds? And so moving forward, I mean, we are about 50 days out from the election. There is still a lot of time that Donald Trump needs to have not just adequate, but competent and thorough security. What, in your view, needs to change moving forward? Because even though the Secret Service did their job, it sounds like, you know, Advance thankfully saw this would-be assassin, that's still too close for comfort. What needs to change in terms of his security team moving forward?
And again, one middle-aged, since the shooter was in the 50s, I'm in the 50s, so I can't call him an old guy yet. One crazed shooter, not a team of professionals. If a foreign power or a gang or whoever is trying to put a bullet on Donald J. Trump, if I were asked to supplement, or someone like me was asked to supplement the president's security, I would broaden the perimeter and put more advanced people on it, and especially put offensive-minded people that are going to look at it to say, how am I going to hunt Donald J. Trump? And these are the 10 ways I'm going to do that, and make sure all 10 of those ways are blocked off. Because the danger of law enforcement trying to do security is they tend to look backwards and gather evidence. You want a hunter, a predator, who is thinking about how they're going to hunt their mark. And until they get in that mindset, Donald J. Trump remains at great risk.
And is this something that the Trump team or Donald Trump himself could request from the Secret Service, or would he have to basically supplement this and bring in his own security team to work parallel or in tandem with Secret Service, if that's even possible?
You know, I just saw a news story that there are JSOC resources, meaning Joint Special Operations Command, which is the parent organization of Delta and SEAL Team 6. And they're over in Taiwan training Taiwanese. That is like going to the grocery store with a Lamborghini. It's a complete overkill. There's an enormous amount of talent, capability available that could be detailed or seconded to the Secret Service, deputized for the next 90 days until the election. So it doesn't even have to be a private solution. There are government available assets that can fix this. That's what should be done.
And that just raises the question of why does the Secret Service just continue to say, well, we lack resources, or this is the amount that the former president just needs because he's not the current sitting president. I mean, there seems like there are so many excuses. I don't have any faith, frankly, that Congress is going to be able to get to the bottom of this, even if they hold another open committee hearing, you know, any of this. This seems like an immediate thing that needs to be resolved as soon as possible and ensure that Donald Trump is safe. And I would be saying the same thing, by the way, if this were a second assassination attempt against sitting Vice President Kamala Harris. I mean, this is something that should not happen in this country. That's what the Secret Service is designed to do. And it seems like there are intentional failures. So in just the last 2 minutes I have with you, Eric Prince, and I really appreciate your time, and everyone can follow him on social media at, and what is your handle? At Real Eric
Real,
D. Prince.
Real Eric D. Prince.
Yeah. So is this intentional from the Secret Service to just say, we're not going to allocate resources? I mean, it seems like we're heading that way.
Look, this is the same Secret Service that falls under the Department of Homeland Security in Mayorkas saying, we've secured the border. and most clearly they have not. So at some point, incompetence becomes malice when it's done ad nauseum. And the Biden administration is one big ad nauseum.
I could not agree more with that. Well, Eric Prince, I really appreciate your insights. And I've seen a lot of responses on social media between yesterday and this morning saying Eric Prince needs to get involved and we wish that he was handling Trump's security team. I agree based on your assessment this morning. So, you know, hopefully that's an option as well. But we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we're continuing to talk about the second assassination attempt, and I think we can characterize it that way as much as the left and even some conservatives, surprisingly, on social media are saying, you know, this wasn't an attempt. They're not, you know, there was no trigger pulling and all of that. Well, under the law for inchoate crimes are basically the crimes that's the characterization and the body of law that deals with criminal acts that were not completed. So it's called what is an inchoate crime. And for attempt, as long as you have an overt act in furtherance of the crime, if something stops you from completing it, like an example, you go to rob a bank and the security team stops you, so you're not actually able to complete it, you can be charged with attempt. So I think it's pretty clear, just based on the information we know now, that because Secret Service stopped this would-be assassin, that doesn't make this not an attempt. And so, you know, of course, the left and some, you know, probably just Trump haters out there or just reality deniers are suggesting, this isn't really an attempt. And, you know, they're trying to minimize it. I saw some ridiculous idiot out there on social media saying no ears were harmed yesterday, so let's move on. I mean, this is just completely ignoring the fact that we still have about 50 days before the election and Trump needs better security. That's just a fact. And it's very frustrating to see that the Secret Service, while they did a fairly good job, at least in this instance, continues to not have the resources that they should. But let's welcome in Steve Dace, who is the host, of course, of The Steve Dace Show on The Blaze. And Steve, your reaction to this, just overall, because I think I wasn't surprised, just like the clip of John Radcliffe that we played in the first segment. I don't think anybody was really surprised about this, but I think we're all very frustrated to see that clearly Donald Trump is not getting the security he needs.
And you have to ask yourself, I think, Jenna, why? And you come up with, because I'm a why guy, you know, and you come up with only two possible answers to that, and neither one of them are very comforting. The most benign option is that it's just a mere coincidence that an overall absolutely ineffective federal government that is in late stage empire collapse in real time. It's just a mere coincidence that that it's manifesting itself in so many ways, like a hydra, that it also happens to encompass the one person in all of the American socio-political maelstrom. It has made it very clear it hates more than anybody else. That is your most benign option, is that. The other option is where we go to some really dark places, because you have questions that just don't make any sense. How is it a kid from the math club went full Peter Parker in front of the entire Secret Service and local police to get a clean headshot? I mean, that dorsal view shot of Trump speaking to the crowd, where you just see the kid just, wall crawling around up there, Spider-Maning up there, and he's within 200 yards. Yet the shot that took him out was 400 yards away. So they had some kind of external or extended perimeter, and they still didn't manage to see him. That's just beyond inexcusable that he got that clean of a shot. And now this guy, how does he know where this is not on the president's public schedule? How does he know what hole he is going to be on? These are questions that there are no good answers to, Sirhan, no good answers to. And so here we are.
And I think those are absolutely the right questions. And when we look at the hypocrisy and the double standards of the left and Kamala Harris, especially in that debate, saying that Donald Trump is the threat to democracy and all of this, without really backing up that claim at all. I mean, it was just a bald-faced accusation. And yet these would-be assassins aren't targeting anybody on the left. I mean, thankfully, it's not that we want them to target anybody. But this is the second assassination attempt of Trump, when clearly the Democrats' rhetoric, as Eric Prince said in the first segment, they're the ones that really are inciting this type of political violence. And so is this, do you think, from a greater, I mean, because we talk, of course, about the spiritual realm as well, do you think that this is bigger than just political violence, that this is a
absolutely
yeah, a point.
I think this is Trump 2 Patsy 0. Okay, I mean, I think they just tried to they tried to JFK him in July with a Patsy whose bio we still don't really know, still is largely unfulfilled. And you know, you have to keep in mind, to most Americans, The actual biography of Lee Harvey Oswald was not known for many, 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 many years, other than the scrubbed version they got in the Warren Commission report. A lot of the stuff that we take for granted knowing about him today was stuff that came out many, many, many years later, when muckrakers took long looks at him, like belonging to an anti-communist society or belonging to a pro-communist society with Clay Shaw in New Orleans and things of that nature. These were things that were just completely glommed over for the official narrative. Now you just saw the Sirhan shot, okay? The documented nutter. This guy was Sirhan, if I remember right, was like a PLO Palestinian guy, okay? Now we've got the guy that's the Ukraine fanatic. His son, by the way, I was reading some stuff from his son. His son's an anti-Trump nutter too, basically just spewing kind of stuff with that, just the F-bomb version of what's on Joy Reid every day. Okay. I mean, this is the playbook, and you're watching it now play out. Okay. The difference is they missed both times. And so the rhetoric of danger to democracy, the country is over and all that kind of stuff, that is all code for, okay, don't miss next time, which is what I've been saying since July 13th when they missed the last time. And that's all going to continue. I mean, they kept putting him on trial until they could get him guilty of something. Okay. And then it was the most egregious campaign finance violation verdict of all time, 130 plus years potentially in prison. Okay. For a non-disclosed payment. All right. Which then, of course, it was so important. This trial was so important that they ended up putting off the sentencing until after the election. All right. And this is after all the other would-be trials, Miami, Washington, everything else. You just keep trying the guy until you can put him in prison. You just keep shooting at the guy until you get him. I mean, just keep impeaching the guy until you get rid of him. I mean, you just have to be willing to do math here. You have to be willing to do math here and not let Donald Trump break your brain one way or the other. Unfortunately, it's not a lot of people in our culture today who have decided to let Donald Trump break their brains one way or the other. But I mean, the math here is pretty simple. All right. Donald Trump is John Travolta in Get Shorty. That's what this is. And they're going to keep doing it until they get him. one way or the other.
And I fear that you're absolutely right, Steve Dace, because the whole get Trump has been the left since 2015. I mean, this is why they've continued. That's why they pushed the Russia Mueller investigation first. That's why they pushed the first impeachment. That's why they've pushed, you know, all of these things is to just get Trump. And the list continues to grow. And so as we head into
I think we need to ask ourselves why, though, Jenna. I think we need to ask ourselves why. And I think that you and I might be uniquely qualified to answer this, given you're someone that worked in the administration and didn't support him in the primary. Okay. And I was also a very high profile supporter of his primary rival during the primary. Okay. So I think maybe we have some credibility to answer this, that maybe some other people who, you know, this time yesterday thought Donald Trump making the campaign a one-on-one between him and Taylor Swift was a good idea, because anything Trump does, they will praise, no matter how what the bleep was that he it is, they will praise it. So I think you and I may be uniquely qualified. So let me answer that question. Okay. For all of his various faults, which he is not shy about exhibiting all too often, which is why we tend to turn off people who should be voting for us with him as a standard bearer, and everything is hard, okay?
But unfortunately.
How did he build this base of loyalty? Why is he such a threat? Because here's the truth also. Ron DeSantis is never governor of Florida without Donald Trump. And that's what they're afraid of. What they're afraid of, it's not that Donald Trump is a finished product as a resistor. He's not, okay? Not even close, but that he's a vanguard, that he's the camel's nose under the tent. Okay, so Trump gets elected, endorses this guy, and DeSantis, who's more polished, understands the levers of government more, and takes a state like Florida that Barack Obama won twice, and it's just totally off the board. Like, it's just not even competitive. Like the Democratic Party, the war machine, none of that stuff even is relevant in the state of Florida on any level whatsoever. That's just one example. One example, okay? That he is a vanguard, that he represents a beachhead being established by the people, that essentially Donald Trump is Brexit but personified. And he represents an oncoming wave of people that are going to represent those that want to opt out of the World Economic Forum, George Sorosing of the world. That's what this is about, okay? So sometimes in people in you and I's positions who work on the inside of this can get myopic about, just as we get upset with his grifter core that, hey, we're trying to win too, and he's doing stupid stuff, so make him stop, all right? And they get myopic in their grift. Sometimes we get myopic in our analysis, okay, and fail to see the larger picture at times, which is this. For all of his various faults, he is not shy about exhibiting. The reason why they view him as a threat is because he won that election, and therefore could be at the vanguard of a true resistance movement to what they're trying to do to the entire Western Hemisphere. That's what it's about, okay? And just as we're like, I don't know what that guy would do for 4 years if he didn't have to face the voters, what kind of deals he would cut, they're looking at it as, we'll know what crazy crap he'll do in there for 4 years without caring what we have to think and having to get reelected again. I mean, he might put all kinds of, Clarence Thomas justices in the federal judiciary and screw us for 50 years. I mean, and that's what this is about. They can't handle the fact that he represents the first manifestation of mass resistance by regular everyday people to what they have globally planned, and they are fearful that he will be the forerunner, to use a political analogy, a spiritual analogy here, that he's a John the Baptist kind of a herald, okay? And John the Baptist, this crazy guy out in the middle of the desert, all right, wearing sackcloth and living on, you know, bees and honey and just saying, you know, whacked out things, but attracting a crowd of people that the system's largely forgotten about and driven over, okay, that he's a herald, that he will herald a vanguard of a movement that after him will be people who are polished. And you see evidences of this when I mentioned DeSantis. Look at how much more polished J.D. Vance is with Donald Trump's talking points than he is. He is a devastating communicator, devastating, okay? And that's what they're afraid of. What they're afraid of is that he is a beachhead. And once that gets established, what will come after him will be true people of discipline and character that they will not so easily be able to character assassinate or distract. And then they're in real trouble.
And I couldn't agree with you more, Steve. And I hope, honestly, that we get to that era of the more disciplined and principled people as soon as possible. I think that that's what this country needs. And that's why I think people like you and I supported Ron DeSantis in the primary to get to that outcome that's good for America. And I think that it's very clear that this is why the left has consistently gone after Trump in every way possible. But when you're talking about something like literally taking a shot at him twice now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that's not taking him out through a legal mechanism or any sort of perceived moral virtue to say, oh, look, he's a convicted felon now, or, oh, look, he's been impeached and removed. This is our process. We're just upholding the Constitution. I mean, this is something that could spark actual civil war if this is their
correct
aim and they are able to accomplish that. So why would that be part of this whole analysis to take him out that way?
I agree. And I think they have, I think the forces behind the modern left would love a civil war. I mean, you've seen Joe Biden, the rare, sentient moments he's had the last few years, almost fetishize it. You know, just randomly drop things like, you guys have all your guns, but we've got bombers. You've got no chance. And I think the denial of agency, I think like not even going to Springfield, Ohio to do stories, to talk to people there, to see what actually might be going on. But immediately, if you think any of this, you're a terrible, this kind of gaslighting, like all the things we saw during COVID, you know, if you, these are the things you do when you no longer want to be married to somebody. Right. There's when you're frustrated in your marriage, but you want to make it work, there are boundaries internally that you do not cross. You know, if I act out in certain ways, if I say certain things, then those become points of no return. And so I'll stop short of that. I'll exercise my frustration every way except that which breaks the covenant, the social compact between my spouse and I, because then it's on. But once those lines are crossed, all right, that's then when there are no more boundaries anymore, and you start talking openly into the person's face, those kinds of things. Because now the lie is the point, the insult is the point. You feel justified in your bitterness or your anger or your desire to be rid of them. That's where the a modern left is with us.
And
there will
you're
come
absolutely
a time
right.
That sooner or later, our side will catch up to that. And I think that's where that's what hell wants. I think hell looks at the left and says, there's no one to stop you, no one to oppose you. Realize all your fever dreams, let all your freak flags fly. All right, have guys with their hairy sphincters twerk for the kids right in public. All right, shoot their candidates. When they show up at the city council school board meetings, just have the police arrest them and take them out, and make sure it's on camera. So everyone knows you don't have agency. They don't have a voice. Because then he turns to us and says, you don't have a voice. You don't have agency. All right? This is absolutely all being done, I believe, to spark an open civil war. And I certainly think the left fantasized about it, because that gives them the justification to bring out all the tanks and everything else that they've long wanted to do anyway. All right? We're China in every way other than we haven't had a Tiananmen Square yet. Okay? But that's really what that's what they want. Is they want a command economy where they're in control of people's lives, and they'll give you enough bread and circuses to keep you satisfied and content so that you won't push back. That's their ultimate goal, is for us to look like that.
And I think you're absolutely right on that as well, Steve Dace. And one last question then for you, which you're of course right that we cannot, as conservatives, as Christians, become the left and say, okay, just because they have torn down all of the rules, all of the boundaries, all of the principles of moral virtue, then in order to win, we just need to fight fire with fire, become them, or justify that in any way at all. And there is a segment of the populist right that is doing that and is engaging in that, and I think would also like to see a civil war, honestly. I mean, they're kind of primed and ready for that. So what is the Christian biblical worldview response when all of this is going on? Because I'm angry. I think a lot of people are angry at what the country is, but we have to remain principled.
I think that we have a window right here. I think it's limited. When I say limited, I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means 10 minutes, 10 years. I don't know. But it won't last forever, where there is a limited window here to be peaceably aggressive with the institutions and the tools we have in front of us, that's what I saw Ron DeSantis do in Florida, and that's why I backed him. Because that window won't stay open very long. And what do I mean by peaceably aggressively? What does DeSantis do? Oh, you don't want to do your job and prosecute crimes? I'll get rid of you. Oh, my Republican legislature wants to punk out and give me an anemic redistricting map? I'll call your rear ends back here in the heat of August, hottest time of the year, and we'll have a special session until you get it right, okay? That kind of stuff, all right? Where I am interpositioning my office, whether it's city council, school board, governor, okay? I'm interpositioning my office against the Leviathan and using the power I have. Like he announced yesterday, we're going to do our own investigation on this. Don't trust the feds, but thanks, okay? His medical director, yes, on Friday saying, no one take the COVID jabs this cold and flu season. They're terrible. Nobody take them, all right? That kind of stuff, all right? Where we're going to create our own alternative, system of governance to push back on their Leviathan. And we need a coalition, but it can't just be him. My home state of Iowa does some of this stuff. I mean, there's too many Mike DeWines, all right? And so we have a limited window to create some kind of coalition of states and communities that will work together. That's how we got Roe versus Wade overturned. Enough states passed these heartbeat bills that overturned it. That's what we need here. Short of that, we're heading to places that are the saddest chapters of history books, minus spiritual revival. Okay, because the social compact is broken. That which bound us together that led to the forming of the Constitution has been broken, and the other side broke it, okay? And they broke it on purpose, okay? Because they've got plans for all of us. And there's no way we can get around that, all right? Sooner or later, the knock comes to your door. So there's a limited window here to avoid those perils of history, but that window will not stay open forever. It won't.
It won't. You're absolutely right, Steve Dace. And I was just talking to a pastor of mine earlier this week that was saying, you know, America does not have the same type of covenant from the Lord isn't mentioned in the book of Revelation. And it could be that America was founded and was here for a purpose, which was to help reestablish the nation of Israel, have a display of the freedoms and blessings of liberty that we have. But we don't have a guarantee of the future of America. This is why we have to continue to stand up firmly if we want to have the blessings of liberty into the future. Otherwise, you know, we may see some of the darkest days of history. And this is why this is a spiritual battle. Ultimately, we need to, as Christians, be praying. We need to be engaging. And we have to be standing up for our values. The first and foremost of those values is truth, standing up for the person of truth. And his name is Jesus Christ. We'll be back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Weekday mornings at 8 Central, Pastor Jeff Shreve offers real truth for today.
I'm the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas, and the founder of From His Heart Ministries.
The world around us is rapidly changing, but God and His truth will never change.
I may be the host of the show, but I want God's Word and His truth to be the star of the show.
Join Pastor Jeff Shreve each weekday morning at 8 Central for Real Truth for Today on American Family Radio. Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And since all of the news today, of course, is about the second assassination attempt of Donald Trump, what the leftist media and the media overall isn't talking about that they should be is Kamala Harris's ridiculous softball solo interview with ABC. Yes, the same ABC that had the moderators that were obviously very biased and only quote unquote fact checked Donald Trump, but did not fact check Kamala Harris once during that debate. But Town Hall says this: Vice President Kamala Harris sat down for a first solo interview interview, still pre-recorded nonetheless, but sans her crutch, vice presidential nominee Governor Tim Walz. She stuck with ABC News, the network that got her through the presidential debate by fact-checking and interjecting former President Donald Trump while throwing her softball questions. Harris answered just five questions during the 11-minute interview with Action News ABC. It's a local affiliate. And I posted the entire 11 minutes on my X account. You can find that on, you know, in a bunch of different places. I would encourage you, if you can stomach it, watch the entire 11-minute interview, because it's utterly ridiculous and so patently obvious how Kamala Harris cannot answer any policy questions. She can't answer any questions at all. And she looks so unpolished compared to the debate, where she had a lot of pre-scripted responses. And there are a lot of questions of whether ABC leaked some of those questions to her in advance of the debate. And I'm more inclined to suspect that based on how terrible this interview was. But listen to just the first portion of this question and response when Kamala was asked something that should be very simple, specifics on her economic plan. This is cut one.
You hear it more than I do. People want to know more about you and about your specific plans. At the debate the other night, you talked about creating an opportunity economy. I wonder if we can drill down on that a little bit. When we talk about bringing down prices and making life more affordable for people, what are one or two specific things you have in mind for that?
Well, I'll start with this. I grew up a middle-class kid. My mother raised my sister and me. She worked very hard. She was able to finally save up enough money to buy our first house when I was a teenager. I grew up in a community of hardworking people, you know, construction workers and nurses and teachers. And I try to explain to some people who may not have had the same experience, you know, but a lot of people will relate to this. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood of folks who were very proud of their lawn, you know, and I was raised to believe and to know that all people deserve dignity. And
okay, let's just stop this right there, because she goes on for like another, you know, solid two and a half minutes responding to this question with her word salad. I mean, she's asked specifics on the economy and she's like, I grew up with people who are very proud of their lawn, and that just resonates. I mean, okay, that's her specifics on the economy. It was a total disaster. And everybody in media should be talking about this because she is a disaster. So let's welcome in Pedro Gonzalez, who is a columnist at Chronicles Magazine. And Pedro, you know, it's really remarkable how suddenly the news cycle has completely changed. And the top story is not Kamala Harris's disaster of an interview. It's a second assassination attempt against Donald Trump. But how much of a disaster do you think this interview really was for Kamala Harris, for people who actually watched the full 11 minutes like I did?
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Jenna. I'll give you an answer that you maybe are not expecting. I think that Kamala Harris actually did what she needed to do in giving these kinds of answers, because I think that the point of them is, one, to sort of run out the clock, so to speak, of avoiding giving a sort of direct, concrete. She does actually eventually later on provide some specific policy items. Whether they actually address the question is, you know, another matter. But this sort of long-winded way of talking that is obviously sort of intended to target heartstrings, that's by design. The whole purpose is her attempting to humanize herself and relate with the audience and make herself seem more just like you and I. And that's what she's doing in that answer. And you could disagree with it. You can say, you know, a real straight shooter would have given you policy items, like a list of them, right from the start, would not have done this elaborate tale, you know, starting with her childhood and things like that, and talking about her neighbor's lawns. But that's actually what she's doing. It's a deliberate strategy. On the one hand, like I said, to sort of run out the clock, and on the other hand, to present herself as no different from you and I. And it's not the first time that she's done this. It's her whole campaign is designed to basically redefine her. And this was a failure, I think, of the Trump campaign early on, was the the inability of the Trump campaign to define her the way that they wanted to, which is obviously as a kind of far left radical. Trump often refers to Marxism and communism and things like that. But for whatever reason, they didn't actually manage to nail that image of Harris down, and Harris and Walz somehow, it defies belief, but they managed to actually present themselves as sort of like center left at worst, middle of the road at best. And this whole sort of folksy storytelling thing is part of it. And I'm sorry to say, but it seems to be working, or it seems to have worked on a decent part of the country, which is why the race is so close.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Pedro, that, for rational people, I think, like you and I, who actually want Kamala Harris to say her policy, because we know that she is a Marxist, we know that, the policies that she has been a little bit more detailed on her website, rather than all of this vagary, are communist in nature. I mean, they're not designed for human flourishing and capitalism and more freedom. It's all about big government and the controls. And so, of course, she's going to be vague. And her campaign is just running on this vague notion of joy and hearkening back to 2008 of Barack Obama. And we've talked about that a lot on this program. So I think in the sense of people who aren't really paying attention, maybe that's effective. But don't you think that some of the moderates and independents, and if there are even people 50 days out from the election who are still undecided, is that kind of vagary and her saying, I grew up with people who were proud of their, next to people who were proud of their lawn. I mean, we all are seeing the same problems with the border, the economy, gas prices, food prices. I mean, does that truly resonate with people? I mean, do you really think she's accomplishing what she needs to do with that kind of rhetoric?
Well, I guess we'll find out in November. But I think the fact that the race is so close is probably a sign that, yes, that she's actually doing a better job than anyone had expected. I think everyone expected Harris to sort of be a totally weak candidate. In some ways, it's very strange, right? I don't want to make it sound like Harris is this like hyper competent, exceptional candidate, but the race is close. I think that's just a fact, and I think Donald Trump recognizes that. I think anyone who's being honest with themselves recognizes that this race is going to come down to the wire. And I think part of that has to do with the strategy that Harris has been employing. And again, for conservatives, this sounds like nonsense, but if you pay careful attention to Harris's rhetoric, she has done a remarkably good job of not presenting herself as too far left. She has made references to like the Green New Deal and things like that. And obviously you might be scoffing, thinking, well, she actually has a record that we can evaluate. You're totally right. That's what a rational, reasonable person would do. But here's the thing. People don't always vote with their heads. Mm-hmm. People don't always vote based on facts and logic. People often vote a lot based on feelings, how a candidate makes them feel about themselves and about their country. And again, that has been something that the Harris campaign has done really effectively, is by presenting her as a kind of middle of the, effectively in the sense that the race is close, by presenting her as a kind of middle of the road person who has, somehow managed to distance herself from Biden's record, from her own record, and become this sort of like law and order, not too far left, not too far right person. And again, it sounds totally absurd to conservatives, but it's, look at the messaging. Unlike Hillary, does Harris refer to herself as like, I'm going to be it's my turn. I'm going to be the first woman president. I can't think of a single time that Harris has actually mentioned the fact that if she wins, she'll be the first female president. I don't think she's mentioned it one time. And the media has actually noted that.
Yeah, that's a good point, that she's not acting as entitled as Hillary is, and she is positioning herself, strong on the border and, all these ridiculous things. And then meanwhile, Donald Trump is out attacking Taylor Swift and posting on Truth Social, "I hate Taylor Swift," which is just ridiculous. I mean, I saw that, and we're about a minute left, and I'll give you, Pedro, time to respond to that. It was so just frustrating to be like, really? That's what you're going to talk about?
Yeah, I the Taylor Swift thing is very strange. It almost seemed like no one really cared because the way that it was announced, Taylor did it over Instagram, and that was that, right? It was sort of already baked into the cake. I think everyone assumed it was going to happen. And yeah, so she makes a an Instagram post. She basically just says, you know, I'm voting for Harris Walz. You should make your best decision and you know, register to vote. And then it kind of went away. And then
yeah,
the blue,
and he should have just ignored it. Yes, yeah. He should have just ignored it instead of making all of the Swifties mad and making it seem like a Taylor Swift endorsement means anything. Like, who cares about celebrities? But we could have talked about that for a little longer, and maybe we will tomorrow. But Pedro Gonzalez, always really appreciate it. People can support Pedro and his work at his Contra Substack. You can follow him on X. And really appreciate your time and analysis. That's all the time we have for today. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.